It's Mike Shope.
Last night at 12:30 in the morning, I ate a can of mushrooms. I did. Pieces and stems, if you're wondering. As opposed to buttons. It was pieces and stems, which will be my next year's fantasy football team name.
Pieces and stems.
Pieces and stems.
And the Bulldog.
I should be ashamed to admit this publicly, but whatever. How long have we been doing this? I'm a junkie. I can't be trusted.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Pieces and stems, still rocking it. It was more than a team name. I don't know exactly how long ago that was, but it was probably... had to be before the days of my having lots of teams, like lots. So it's a username for me and not a team name. All the team names come underneath the umbrella, the largesse of pieces and stems. Ironic, isn't it? Because pieces and stems are really little. In that tiny little can that's like 89 cents. Would Bulldog wrap the pieces and stems in foil? Cheap shot. Would he do that? They're already in oil. Maybe they don't need to be in foil. You don't need the F. Sometimes you do in life, but not that time. So you just have the oil already, pieces and stems, boom, tiny little can, just like a toothpick is all you need for those little guys. What? Pieces and stems. What's such a great name. I have a tough time finding the beans in the store. The signs are usually pretty... self-explanatory, and they don't really confuse you, but I never see, like, where are the beans? I just never seem to know. There's baking, there's pasta, there's Asian and Mexican, there's crunchy snacks. You know, you have kind of themes in the... I never can find the beans. I don't know. That's a me problem. Almost every time I go to the grocery store, I end up at least once on the app for where is something. And I'll be like right there and I don't see it. And it'll say, you're in 13B. You need to be in 13B and like level 5 or something. I don't understand that. Probably like which shelf it's on. And I wouldn't be good on a game show where you had to run around the store and find things. Run around the store and fill your shopping cart like a supermarket sweep bonus round situation. The show has never sounded older. With the most expensive things in the store, that I could do, I think. That's something we have not spent enough time on in the history of this show, is how you would attack that. 60 or 120 seconds in a grocery store, where are you going? I mean, you're going to the steaks, I think, first. You're going to the ribeye. You're going to the big cuts of meat. But after that, it might get a little bit more nuanced. Anyway, with me now on the West Her Hotline is Mike Tenier. Mike has covered the NFL for a long time. He and Aaron Schatz, a great team over the years, too. And I'm always excited to talk to Mike and Aaron, kind of because you can get into some historical context with stuff that you can't do with just anybody. And so, Mike, that's kind of where my head is at as we embark here. Thanks for joining me.
My head is at 120 seconds at a shopping spree in a supermarket.
Where are you?
That's the rules.
Where are you going? What's your plan of attack?
I'm stocking up on detergent and toilet paper and all the expensive home chemicals right away, and I'm cutting out. You're going for the steaks. You do not have, I guess maybe you have a freezer to put those steaks in. You're not going to be able to get to those steaks in time. You're going to load up your freezer and your refrigerator too quickly. I'm going to have my stuff stored in the garage. I will never have to buy detergent again.
I wasn't thinking so much about the consumption side of this, but now that you're talking, I probably should be. I wasn't thinking. I feel like on these game shows, they don't take any of that stuff home. They just sort of, somebody rings them up and this is the most money. And so here you go. You won $10,000 or something. But
Look at the price of the detergents nowadays. Yep. You're going to rack up a lot of money just getting that stuff. $25 for like a big container of it.
You know what else, Mike? Spices.
Yes. Oh, yes. No, if that's the deal, go straight to the spices. Go find like the saffron and stuff like that and just dump the entire thing in your cart and go walking out like a king.
All the Ceylon cinnamon they have are going home with
me. Yes, white pepper, yellow pepper. Go get it.
White pepper, tarragon, saffron, you said. That's perfect. All right, well.
Olive oil.
Like I said, I've been sitting here for 24 years. We haven't really done enough on just how to attack a grocery store in this way. Mike, so the Bills, historically, I've seen the references to how only the 70s Rams have gone as long as 8 years in a row in the playoffs without a championship. And even they got to one Super Bowl. What are the Bills for you if you think about like the last decade? I mean, they're probably like both a success and a failure, maybe to some extent.
Right. On the historical stage, they're this success. You know, there's the Chiefs and then like everybody else, and the Bills are in there. And maybe you want to put a team like the Eagles, who have like, you know, two recent Super Bowls ahead of them. But the Bills are in this all-time everything but the ring list. And they may be at the top of that. And when you're living through it, it feels very much like a failure. I'm sure the listeners are nodding along. It doesn't feel great to be there. But then if you look back at it 20 years later, it's like, well, this was a golden era. Look at these guys. Look at Josh Allen. Look at what they accomplished. I don't know what kind of comfort you bring from that, though, when you're in the midst of it.
Yeah, and that's something where, especially as a host in this market, I don't want to try to skip ahead to the end. And what do we say if they don't ever get there? We do have the 90s Bills as some point of reference for that. But so I don't want to do that out loud, but I think maybe everybody does ponder that, is like, is this actually going to culminate in a championship? Because if it doesn't, it would just seem like such a wasted, not entirely, but sort of a wasted opportunity at least. Because how many teams get gifted with this kind of player and don't win?
And that's it. I'm guessing you have to deal with it day in, day out, week in, week out. You win by 30 points in September and October, and people are calling in or they're listening and they're shrugging. They're shrugging their shoulders. That's expected. That's what we're supposed to do. You lose a game to the Falcons. That the sky is absolutely falling. There's nothing you can hang your hat on. It's like, well, we had a parade, so maybe this is an off year and we can bounce back. You don't see all those things that other teams get to point to and say, well, we've been to the top, so we know what it looks like and we can do that again. It's got to be frustrating. And yeah, everybody who remembers the 1990s Bills, they reached the Super Bowl. As heartbreaking as it was time and time again, that team, which wasn't really as strong statistically as this team, at least got there year after year after year, and that hope would come in. This team, you hope that we're not talking about them in the past tense at this point, but I understand that the fear you have that you might be doing so.
Yeah. I wonder if you could concoct a trade between those teams and this team, how you would do it.
Oh,
like,
wow.
The big difference is I think the biggest difference is the quality of the AFC in the Bills Super Bowl years versus now. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, that's a great way of looking at it. Like, you have to trade Patrick Mahomes away or something like that, so that it has an easier road along the way. Although you look back then and you had these John Elway-led teams. You had a Dan Marino-led team in your division at that point. So it was tough back then. If you're going to make some kind of trade, try to get Bruce Smith on this team.
No kidding.
Get Bruce Smith on this team, and I think your problems are solved. And that's one of the stories of the last couple of years. It's like, well, who is that elite edge rusher, takes it over the top? You're always trying to get that guy as a free agent late in his career, and it never quite works out.
Yeah, that's easier for me than the other way around, like Bruce Smith or Andre, right? Just like,
okay,
you know, this team, a top five wide receiver in the league, a number one, if not number one, number two defensive end, if not defensive player in the NFL, Bruce Smith in his prime. So, yeah, that would work. Mm-hmm. Well, it's an interesting moment here, Mike, in the conference, because for a couple of years, and we've spoken during that time a few times, how you kind of have, I mean, every division in the conference, the champion repeated 23-24, and then in 25, it all got wiped out. It was, you know, Baltimore, Kansas City, Cincinnati all had losing records. So we have kind of an old guard, new guard, so to speak, in the conference now, where you have the teams that we're used to talking, including the Bills, we're used to talking about as like the elites. And now we've got New England and Denver and, I mean, maybe Jacksonville. I'm not sure that's the whole list. So it's cluttered right now.
It is very clever, cluttered. It was almost like the Ravens, Bills, and Chiefs all pulled in the pit row at the same time. The Chiefs were on fire because of injuries, and the other two teams, it's like, well, so it was time to change things up. And everyone's pulling out of pit row now with a different story. And the Bills feel like they're the strongest of those three teams right now. The Ravens lost so much in free agency. I think it's losing a lot to go from Harbaugh to sort of Harbaugh light in Minter. You know, you can't discount the Chiefs, but again, you're looking at, well, is Patrick Mahomes even healthy for week one? That's a big question. Are we still doing this thing with Travis Kelce and Chris Jones? The Bills should be the strongest team, but the Bills may have the toughest in division competitor as well, where you look at that, that the Patriots, they got significantly stronger and they reached the Super Bowl. So right away you have like, well, we're in better shape than these other guys, yet we have the biggest questions to ask because we might have the biggest foe that we have to face twice a year.
Right. With Mike Tenier, I'm Mike Schoep. Bulldog is off this week. I want to get back to present day, but now going back to historical, Aaron just did a piece for ESPN on the best by DVOA. A statistic, a metric you're very, very familiar with. All the teams in NFL history that did not make a Super Bowl. And I thought it was interesting that on his ranking, the 23 and 24 Ravens were like both top four teams on this list. The Bills, you have to dig a little bit deeper. I want to talk about this somewhat later because it's 2022 when they lose to Cincinnati that comes in at the top of Bills teams on this list. Do you think of it as maybe these metrics would reflect that the Ravens have had more, I don't know, claim or more, were more sort of, what's the word I want, deserving of a trip to the Super Bowl than the Bills? Or, I mean, the Bills knocked them out a couple times.
Yeah, you know, one of the things with the Ravens is they have the statistical dominance. And then when you look at, when you look closely at what happened to them, it, you understand why. When you zoom out, you see it because it's like, well, you know, not just Lamar Jackson, but Derrick Henry a lot of these years and Kyle Hamilton and all these other stars. And then you zoom into what happened. And, you know, last year was kind of a great example. It's like, well, the guy's foot was out of bounds on a touchdown that would have won the game. And then on another game, the ball hit the ground, but like they didn't call it that way. And then the kicker missed the field goal. There's always a shaggy dog story about what happened to the Ravens. Oh, it was fourth and two and Lamar rolled out and the receiver, you know, dropped the ball. Or there's so many examples like that of what happened to the Ravens. When you start saying things like deserving, I think even, you know, a John Harbaugh would flinch at that. It's like, right, if you deserve it, you make the one or two plays. You don't lose the one or two plays.
That's
but
right.
The statistics do show, yeah, they show that those Ravens teams were special among special. So are those Bills teams. But, you know, they make great historical articles in August, and that, you know, 50 cents buys you a newspaper.
Yeah, I didn't want deserving. I was scrambling a little bit because, like, that's,
yeah,
that's
hard.
Right. That's sports. I mean, you do have to execute.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, like, right, in the big spots, the Bills have had a couple 13 seconds where, like, just, okay, well, you have to finish this. And it's not good enough to just talk about how close you were.
Right. It is interesting where it's like, well, the Ravens did this dumb thing in this playoff game. And where the Bills, when you really look at it, it usually is, gosh, what happened in week six against the Dolphins? You know, what happened in that one dumb trap trip over the guy game that meant that they had to play an Arrowhead? That's usually a different question.
Right.
And that's why the Bills were an Arrowhead, and that's why this and that happened. For the Ravens, it's like, well, they were at home, but they did something silly. I guess it's two sides of the same coin.
Yeah, that's right. You know, the Bills have been so good, but they've yet to get to that one. And the one year for me, Mike, where it's the most maddening is the year where Kansas City won all the games against bad teams by 2 points. And they won all the close games, and, you know, big football media just talked about how that meant that they were, like, they knew how to win, and I just was pulling my hair out. The next year, of course, they forgot because they lost every one of those games last year. But, yeah, I mean, the Bills went, they beat Kansas City, I think, that year. They go to that game in Denver the last week, they don't need it, and everybody sits and they lose to finish 15-2. Their one loss was here. I mean, how about this?
Right.
How about this, by the way, Mike? For historical purposes, can there possibly be another example of a team beating a team like Kansas City 5 years in a row in the regular season, which the Bills have done? But in that span, they've gone 0-4, or maybe 1 year further in the back. Like, they've lost to them four times in the playoffs. I mean, you talk about a meaningless, a worthless kind of statistic. Who beats Kansas City 5 years in a row? These guys, yet.
Right.
You know, just that's a tough one to swallow.
It's a tough one. I mean, the analog I think of, and I don't have any statistics in front of me, is how many times the Vikings would win an NFC championship game in the 70s against a Cowboys team or a Rams team that had their number in the regular season, but it would go up to Bloomington before they had a dome. It was negative 25 degrees, and then the Vikings won somehow. It's like, yeah, they won somehow. They weren't freezing to death on the field, but that's the closest analog I can come to the kind of thing that happens with the Bills nowadays.
Right. Back at the Met, where both teams were on the same sideline in those years.
Yes.
Somehow.
Yes.
Somehow that happened. Mike Tenier, my guest. I'm Mike Shope here on WGR. So this year, let's talk about Kansas City for a minute. Mike, like, should the Chiefs be the team that we fixate on or whatever that would be? Or should it be New England? I mean, that's in the division. That's always where you start. Or even Baltimore, I suppose. How do you sort of, like, when you look ahead to this Bills season, who are the biggest potential problems?
Yeah, if I'm a Bills fan, I'm fixating on the Patriots with A.J. Brown now and with a year under a belt and not a lot of reasons. We know the Patriots' schedule was extremely easy last year. And if Aaron was talking to you right now, he'd talk about DVOA and say, so was the Bills' schedule. You know, and the Bills got to play the Jets, too. The Bills got to play the Dolphins, too. And they tripped over the Dolphins once, and they tripped over the Falcons once. And so you look at the Patriots and say, this is the team that you have to worry about. When I go over to the Chiefs, it's tricky because, you know, first of all, we assume now Patrick Mahomes will be back week one. So many changes on defense. You wonder if they did what they had to do on defense or if they lost guys like Trent McDuffie, and that was the veteran secondary that was helping them win one-score games when their offense wasn't chugging along. So, the Chiefs are the vampire that you have to drive the stake through the heart and cut the head off of. They're still out there. But the Bills have not earned the right to look past anyone, particularly in their division, particularly the Patriots.
That's fair, yeah. The Chiefs somehow have managed to become the league's second youngest roster.
Yes.
I don't know how exactly they did that, but now they have that, right. In their favor going forward. So
yeah, it's like Travis Kelce should count as like two 36-year-olds,
right. Yeah.
Or something like that. And yeah, everyone's class of 2024, 2025, they've drafted exceptionally well, and that's kept them relevant.
You wrote about every team's, but the Bills draft back in the spring at Two Deep Zone. And let's talk about sort of Brandon Bean here and what you think of his performance. So he gets the promotion. Sean McDermott gets the door in the offseason. And this draft felt mostly like more of the same. The one big piece that happened around that time was the DJ Moore trade, which, yes. I mean, they're going to want to think helps cover for what they haven't done at receiver in the draft. Will they be right?
Well, I think DJ Moore is the big help that you're looking for. You go out of the bigger question. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of Brandon Bean's overall performance in the last couple of years. I think that you talk about the Chiefs and how they found meaningful players, even though they're a first-place team in 2024, 2025. You see a lot less of that in recent drafts for the Bills. You know, Keon Coleman has become this sort of wedge issue type of player. We're talking about this year's draft. They drafted this year as almost like they were drafting depth for 2027, 2028. For that to be true, we need to see Maxwell Hairston out there being an impact player. We need to see Deion Walker, I know he's had a very good camp. I've been reading about that, out there being an impact player. We need to see Cole Bishop. I know he just came back from an injury. You need to see these guys, and if we can talk about them, Coleman as well, I suppose, we can talk about that, and then we can evaluate saying, oh, well, you know, you waited to, it was a second-round pick, and you got T.J. Parker, some of these guys. Then we can do that. But if you don't see the dividends from 24 and 25, then we can't really talk about what he did in 2026 because those were supposed to be the backups to those previous guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Skylar Bell is an interesting one. I know it's a fourth-round pick, but I follow plenty of draft guys who were really excited about him at UConn and thought, like, well, that's good value, and we always want wide receivers around here. Here is one. But, man, is there a place for him with Shakir on the team where, like, you have – is there a role? I know he's a rookie still. Like, that's another consideration. But, Yeah, you called it in your article a square peg receiver, not as a knock on him, but just like sort of how the Bills' offense and their personnel and these drafts have kind of been this throughout for me, Mike, because like Kincaid was a really cool idea, but you have Knox and you're going to use Knox and they want to run the ball then, and that's not going to go away. And so how do you use him? I mean, he's been hurt too. And then Shakir kind of blocks you in a way. And
yeah.
Kincaid and Shakir a little bit overlap because neither's going to play outside, of course. So, well, at least Kincaid isn't, at least. So, I don't know. Right. Like, philosophically, it's been kind of strange.
Philosophically, it's kind of strange. And then you see Jackson Hawes out there blocking his butt off. It's like, well, why can't Knox and Kincaid be on the field at the same time? It's like, well, if you want this big blocker out there, right, he's going to be one of them. You have these slot guys. Now, you know, Shakir's a proven commodity in the slot. Skylar Bell is a small program slot guy. You know how it is at these smaller programs? If you hide the really good guy in the slot, he's being covered by some linebacker for some small program. And, yeah, he's getting open and he's dusting people. I don't know what Skylar Bell really is. In the short term, and again, I know Keon Coleman now, it looks like something similar to turf toe going on, so there's a question there.
Yep.
You know, Shakir should be in the slot. Coleman, I guess, or Palmer should be like the vertical guy. Moore should be the vertical guy. That should be simple. Is it great? No, it's kind of like Shakir and a couple of question marks, older guys, role players, whatever. It's what you got. It's what Josh Allen is stuck with. So is it going to be two tight ends, James Cook, pound the ball? What's it going to look like? We probably know because we saw it last year, because the guy who called the plays last year is still calling the plays this year.
Just a couple of minutes here, Mike, if you have it. Zooming out, the Rams are the pretty clear Super Bowl favorite right now. I mean, a little bit of a distance between the Rams, and then it's Buffalo and Baltimore and some of the usual suspects. Does that line up for you? Like, are the Rams, even without Aaron Donald to this point, maybe bettors are predicting he just walks in the door. Maybe he will. But do you accept the Rams as like sort of the team to beat?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. A lot of times this time of year, it's like, well, pick your Super Bowl winner. And you're stuck either saying, well, it's the Rams, or being a contrarian. Like, the moment you say someone other than the Rams, it's almost like you have to make this argument. And I'm not making the argument. It's the Rams. You go out in the offseason, you get Myles Garrett, and you get Trent McDuffie, and maybe you're getting Aaron Donald, maybe not, but you were already like one or two players away from the Super Bowl, and you got those players. It's the Rams. They're the team to beat until proven otherwise. Seahawks, I think, are tough, but it's hard to argue with the just preponderance of top-end talent that they have on their roster right now.
I know a year ago around this time, as a fantasy player, I was distracted by Matthew Stafford being in that truck outside there and some cryogenic thing. Like, was he even going to play? Is the truck gone? Like, there's no talk about his physical status anymore. Like, we just sort of completely got rid of that last year because he held up.
I think so. Either we stop talking about the truck, or that's where they hide Puka Nacua and Myles Garrett when they're not practicing. And then I don't want to know. If Puka's in there, I do not want to know what's happening in the truck. But I think we've learned with the Rams, it's like they'll hold you out of practice for any reason whatsoever, including you're just a veteran, go play video games or, you know, go fishing or whatever, and we'll make a lie up for you. I'm not going to worry about any Rams injury until it's week one and I see that their status is in doubt.
Mike, if you choose to, like, where are we finding most of your work now? I mentioned Two Deep Zone. What else have you got going on?
Yes. Well, Two Deep Zone is the main place to do it, and you can just Google it, T-O-O Deep Zone. That's my primary home, and you'll find news, stats, analysis, jokes all around the league, all 32 teams, all the time. Again, it's Two Deep Zone. Just search for it in your favorite web browser, and it'll pop up.
Or miketanier.substack.com as well to subscribe and get everything as well. Very good.
Oh, it's no longer at Substack. It is now at Ghost. That's why I was being a little weird about that. And because it's a Ghost, it's got like extra stuff that I don't feel like saying on the radio.
Okay.
T-O-O, Deep Zone. You will find me, promise. You can follow me on Blue Sky as well, at Mike Tanier, T-A-N-I-E-R.
I went and asked you and you answered, and I went and changed your answer, which was very rude of me. Very good. Mike, it's always a treat. Thanks for your time.
Always a pleasure. Take care and enjoy the preseason.
Oh, who wouldn't? Mike Tanier with us on the Western Hotline here on WGR. Next, Daryl Reiter on the Browns, as the Bills are off to see the Browns this week. That'll be after the update. This is Mike Shope on WGR.
Well, we both talked about that if we see out of our ones, our older players, what we want to see on Thursday, they would not play in the game. We agreed upon that. plan is that we'll play our ones a significant amount against each other on Thursday in a controlled environment. Not that the other guys aren't going to get reps, but in a controlled environment and see where we're at.
That is the new Cleveland Browns coach, Todd Monken. I think controlled is an interesting word because some of these joint practices seem to, well, maybe they lose control. And I think that's probably one thing on Monken and also Joe Brady's mind going into this thing tomorrow. Let's visit with Daryl Reiter from 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland as the Bills are on their way, if they're not there already. Daryl, are you ready for a joint practice?
I have never been more ready to see another football team than I am for tomorrow when the Bills get here.
What about the idea that there's a line that sometimes gets crossed, right? Everybody's excited to, not just you or me, but everybody's excited to see, the so-called different colored uniforms. How important is it in your mind to Monken and the Browns that it sort of stay, so to speak, between the lines?
Yeah, I think it's important. Todd Monken is a no-nonsense coach, that's for sure. He's already ended two practices in training camp. In fact, Tuesday's practice was a direct result of his displeasure with defensive players being too aggressive. One hit on Quinshon Judkins. Judkins did not practice today, minor injury as a result of that. And then getting too close to the quarterback. And Monken let defensive coordinator Mike Rutenberg hear about it. And then he let his team hear about it after practice. So he's not looking to turn this into a brawl tomorrow. He wants both the Bills and the Browns to get quality work in against each other. As he put it, today it's going to be a measuring stick for the Browns so they can see how they stack up with an elite team in the NFL, because the Browns are the furthest thing from an elite team in the NFL. So he definitely wants the attention and the focus to be on what takes place between the lines and not any extracurricular activities.
Daryl, beyond just tomorrow and even the preseason, what are your vibes when it comes to Monken? A lot of times coaches get hired because they're, to some degree, the opposite of the last guy. And I think maybe personality-wise, from the outside, I would say that they check that box here in Cleveland. Maybe that puts it mildly. What kind of feelings do you have about him?
Yeah, he is the antithesis of Kevin Stefanski. You ask him a question, he gives you an answer. You may not like the answer, but he's going to give you an answer. He's not worried about being politically correct or worried about being close to the vest. Really, the only questions he tends to shy away from are directly related to player injuries. But outside of that, you ask him a question, he gives you an answer. You might not like the answer, but that's just how he feels. And he's not faking it. He's not trying to put on a show. He's not trying to fake, being coy and things like that. I think under the circumstances, I've been really impressed with what he has done. It looks like a professional outfit. It operates like a professional outfit. We'll find out if it actually can play like a professional outfit. I have my doubts, but that more has to do with the quarterback than that's going to be available to him than the head coach. But I was very skeptical when they hired Todd Monken, and I have acknowledged locally that just how impressed I have been and how my feelings on that whole situation have done a complete 180. And so he might be exactly what the doctor ordered for this young football team, and especially a young football team that's going to struggle from the quarterback position all season.
With Daryl Reiter, well, you said a lot right there. What should be the plan? What do you think is the plan at that position? Is it Watson, period, or Sanders? Like, what do you think they should want to do?
Well, they should start Shedeur Sanders, but they're not going to. They're going to start Deshaun Watson. I'm convinced of that. That decision has not been made. I want to be very clear about that. That's my opinion. Mm-hmm. But my gut has a very good batting average, so I'm going to stick with that. As long as he's healthy and available, Deshaun Watson will be the week one starter. And also, too, I think they'll just be more comfortable buying some extra time for Shedeur Sanders to continue to develop and kind of get his act together, so to speak. to be ready to be an NFL starter. Because quite frankly, Shedeur Sanders is not ready to be an NFL starter. Now, I know his fans don't want to hear that across the country. They are a special breed of fans. I will say that. You can praise the kid for 59 minutes and 50 seconds, but it's the 10 seconds of criticism that you have them. They remember, and you're a hater and you're a racist and all these other things. But they should start Shedeur Sanders. There's more upside to him. This is a young football team, it's about growth. I just don't see any upside in starting Deshaun Watson. But this is Todd Monken's first job as an NFL head coach. He had to wait until he was 60 years old to get it. And so I think he's going to go with the veteran. The operation before the snap is better with Deshaun Watson, but I would say the operation after the snap is better with Shedeur Sanders. So, it's from my position, a no-win situation for the Cleveland Browns right now.
Daryl, is it as simple as that Watson has suffered so much physical damage, even since he's been to Cleveland? I mean, that was, of course, such a controversial move in the first place. Is it deeper than that? Where psychologically, maybe you would say that he couldn't get it back after what happened in his personal life and in Houston. I don't know. Like, it to me, it could be both, and maybe that's the end of it. But I think, you know, physically, he's the shoulder and then the Achilles injuries. Like, I don't know. Maybe there's just no hope there.
I think it's a physical problem. I think he's had plenty of time to deal with the off the field issues. He's spent obviously a lot of time the last 2 years rehabbing injuries, first the shoulder, then Achilles tear number one, followed by Achilles tear number two. From my standpoint, I just don't think he can physically do it anymore. It's just how I feel about it, and it's why I'm against the Browns even putting him on the football field, because I don't see the benefit. He's a sunk cost. Mm-hmm. This is the last year you have to pay him. He'll be on your salary cap books for the 27 and 28 seasons after they waive him with a post-June 1 designation next March so they can split his remaining cap charge over 2 years. But, yeah, I don't see any upside for the Browns in starting Deshaun Watson, and it's because there, I believe, are physical limitations. This is not a situation where I think he's mentally challenged. I don't think or drained, I should say. I don't think this is a situation where he lacks the effort or the desire or anything like that. I have repeatedly said I give him all the credit in the world. He could have pocketed the full 230 and stayed away. He forced the Browns to open the 21-day practice window during the end of last season just so he could get back on the practice field and get some work. That's commendable. And then obviously he's worked really hard to put him in a position where he could go through this quarterback competition, which I do think he's going to win, and go ahead and start week one for the Browns in Jacksonville on September 13.
You have, and your colleagues together, just a very qualified, interesting inside perspective on what this last few years has been. When Watson was traded to Cleveland, my co-host at the time said, I think I'd have to quit this job if that happened here. Like, he just did not want to ever have to talk about it. And it might get, I'm asking, Daryl, like, it might have become really twisted, because deep down we all want the home team to win. I mean, we don't always want to admit it, but, you know, we do. And now you've got a player that's so controversial. And, I mean, do you want to root for him? Do you want to root against him? And you're taking the fans along on a trip when it comes to this. And, I mean, I don't know. I have never, to put it simply, envied your position on this subject in Cleveland, because I don't know how I would want to deal with it either. You don't have to admit it or tell me, but you might just kind of want it to be over.
Well, I'll say this, there is a lot more to that whole situation and the accusations and the lawsuits and whatnot that has been discussed in the public sphere. And quite frankly, you can't discuss it in the public sphere. And I'm just going to leave that part of it there. That doesn't excuse the accusations or the alleged behavior by any stretch of the imagination. But again, I just feel like there is, based on things that I have been told from various sources, there is more to the story than just what has been put out there. I will say there's this very specific reason why when the NFL pursued their investigation and concluded their investigation, they only included four women in those as far as the accusations, right? That's why he served the 11-game suspension. It wasn't because of the 26 or 27, I forget the specific number. It was because of the four women and the incidents related to those women that the NFL investigated. But look, I mean, he's played 19 games since this all went down. He's not been good in the 19 games on the field that he has played. He's not looked good in practice. He's not looked good in the games. So, yeah, I mean, there is no juice worth the squeeze there with him at this point. And that's part of the reason I favor just starting Shador. Do I think Shador Sanders is ready to be an NFL quarterback? No, I think he has the potential to be. There's a lot of upside with the kid. There's a lot to like in his game. But he's not ready. I mean, he messed up a last end of game situation today in practice, getting everyone set so he could spike the football properly. He messed that up. There's a lot of work that Shador needs to do. But I just rather watch that than watch a guy who's been through the injuries that he's been through, that struggles throwing the ball down the field with accuracy. I see more non-competitive throws in practice from Deshaun Watson than I do Shador Sanders, as far as being so far off target and things like that. So it's not a matter of whether or not I want this whole situation to be over with. It's just a matter of looking at the big picture of where the Browns are at in their roster building process and where they are as a team and an organization. And I just think that there's more to gain by playing Shador Sanders rather than playing Deshaun Watson. But again, I understand why I feel like Todd Monken is going to go with Deshaun, because he's the veteran. He has the experience. He can do the pre-snap stuff that's required. And then when the thing falls apart, well, you can always turn it over to Shador rather than, okay, you put Shador out there before he's ready to go. And then all of a sudden, well, you find out the kid really can't do this thing. You've got to save him from himself. And now you send Deshaun in to be the mop and bucket. And that doesn't make a lot of sense either. So that's kind of where I am at as far as this whole situation goes, and where I do believe the Browns are as well.
Thank you, Daryl. The last time Watson played was October of 24. Then the next week, it seems like so long ago, but it's Jameis Winston who starts, and they upset Baltimore that year. It's kind of a big win. Yeah. And then Watson has not been seen since, until apparently coming up here soon, week one, as soon as week one. Quickly, last thing, how good is the Browns defense likely to be?
I think they're going to be pretty good. We're going to find out tomorrow, though, okay? Because they look like a top defense going against this Browns offense. I actually said in my recap video today, we're going to find out just how bad this Browns offense really is, because the defense every day makes plays. They've had over 20 interceptions. This is a secondary that in the last couple of years doesn't catch the football. They haven't caught the football, haven't created the turnovers. They're doing it in training camp this year, so I'm guessing that's a good thing, but it's also a bad thing because the quarterbacks are turning the ball over. So I am very curious to see how good they really are. I think Denzel Ward remains one of the top cornerbacks in the game. Jared Verse, that was brilliant by Andrew Berry and the Browns to get him. He's as good as advertised. He's not Myles Garrett. Nobody is. But if substitutes go, he's going to get after the quarterback and apply pressure. I really like what I've seen from the Browns defensive front. But again, is that because the Browns offensive line isn't playing well, or are they that good? Tomorrow's going to be the real deal, because they're going to go against that Bills offensive line. They're going to go against Josh Allen and those receivers and that potent offense. And we're going to find out real fast. Are they for real, or are they good because they play against their offense every day?
These practices are interesting, more interesting than the games tend to be. Enjoy it, Daryl. Thanks as always for your time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Daryl Ryder, 92.3, The Fan in Cleveland. Sal's on his way if he's not there already, and I'll ring him. Anybody say that anymore? No. Getting head shakes all around me. 5:30 for Sal today. I'm Mike Shope. No Bulldog until Monday. This is WGR.